Welcome back to Ladies with Gumption. This is episode 178, Parting Gifts. My name is Jessica, and I am one third of the Ladies with Gumption. The other two thirds are...
May.
And Tatiana.
And we recap DCTV in a flash. You can send us all of your flashy thoughts to our Twitter at DCTV Gumption, where you can follow along as we live tweet the shows. You can send us your reviews on... ladieswgumption@gmail.com or email address, or you can send us asks on ladieswgumption.tumblr.com. You can find our podcast on Podomatic if that's where you found us. But we're also on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, and on Patreon. If you so choose to pay us a measly $10 a month, then you can not only get these episodes 24 hours in advance, but you also get a library of extra content. So we do all of the HBO Max shows there. So DCTV Premium, as well as MCU shows, and popular Netflix series, and movies. So most recently, over this little break that we had, we did Encanto, followed by the extreme opposite end of the spectrum, and talked about Peacemaker, which is an awesome... very awesome show. And if you want to know what you thought about it, head over.
But both about trauma stemming from dysfunctional families.
That is very true. If you want to listen to all of that, then you can visit us at www.patreon.com/DCTVGumption. In the news, we have a Critics' Choice Super Awards. Is this the first time that they're doing this, May?
This is the second annual one. Last year it was live streamed and Kevin Smith hosted online. I don't know if they're ever going to have a full-out ceremony, but I would love that. But, yeah.
So that would be fun, yeah.
Some nominees, yeah.
Do you have I know that Javicia Leslie was nominated for Best Actress in a DC series, and then Brendan Fraser was nominated for Doom Patrol, I believe. Do you remember some of the other awards?
Right. Let me just check my email. Hold on. I remember that Marvel was nominated for a lot of stuff, but I do know that DC Midnight was... Mass and Evil took, like, the main TV stuff for horror.
Oh, interesting.
For superhero, best actress in a superhero movie, we had Gal Gadot in Justice League for reasons.
Okay.
Scarlett Johansson, sure. Black Widow, Florence Pugh in Black Widow, Margot Robbie in Suicide Squad, Michelle Yao in Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings, and then Zendaya in Spider-Man No Way Home.
Sure.
Best actor in a superhero movie, John Cena in The Suicide Squad, Idris Elba in The Suicide Squad, Andrew Garfield in Spider-Man No Way Home, Tom Holland in the same movie, Tony Leung in Shang-Chi, and Simu Liu in Shang-Chi as well. So there's a lot of overlap here. For best superhero movie, Black Widow, Eternals, Shang-Chi, Spider-Man No Way Home, Suicide Squad, and Zack Snyder's Justice League.
It's a concentrated, you know, category. So
It is. Let's see, for the TV section. We had for Best Actress in a Superhero Series, Javicia Leslie, Sofia DiMartino in Loki, Katherine Hahn in WandaVision. Yeah. Ugunbatha Raw in Loki, Elizabeth Olsen in WandaVision, Hailee Steinfeld in Hawkeye.
Wow.
For Best Actor in Superhero Series.
It's all like Marvel.
I was mad because they didn't nominate. I mean, I think they nominated someone from Doom Patrol last year. I think it was Ryan Guerrero. But her and April Bowlby both deserved this year as well, I think. For Best Actor, Paul Bettany, WandaVision, Tom Ellis, Lucifer.
But just because it was the final season, I'm sure.
But that's superhero?
Yes.
All right, but sure.
Technically, yes. I guess just not in like the traditional sense. Tom Hiddleston, yeah. Loki, Tyler Hoechlin, Superman and Lois, and Anthony Mackie in The Falcon and the Winter Soldier. And for best superhero series, we've got Doom Patrol, Hawkeye, Loki, Lucifer, Superman and Lois, and WandaVision.
Well, at least Doom Patrol got a nomination there.
Mm-hmm. But again, Lucifer being in the superhero series category, like... Lucifer being nominated at all is strange to me, personally, but, you know.
Did you mention Brendan Fraser and I just missed it?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So I thought. So there you go. When did the awards commence?
They commence. I think our voting is this Tuesday? And they actually are announced March 17.
Okay. So stick around. Stay tuned for that. Come back in a couple weeks and figure out who won the awards. Speaking of the Peacemaker season finale that we did on Patreon, it was kind of funny because on Twitter, before I got a chance to watch it, like people, you know, fanboys were talking about stuff and complaining, and they're like, they're really complaining about this joke about Aquaman being a fish
hooker. Yes, they're so offended.
They were so offended. And then I watched the episode, and the thing that he said about Green Arrow, I was like, how did, but I wrote it down just so I could remember to say it. He was like, because I think Adrian was like, why don't we, you know, oh, like Green Arrow. And he was like, no, not like Green Arrow. That dude goes to brony conventions, dresses the back half of Twilight Sparkle with a 4-inch-wide butthole drilled in the costume. And then Adrian is like, maybe so he can breathe properly? And then Leota Adebayo was like, you really believe that shit? He has an insane story for every single superhero. And then Economo says, no, I actually heard that about Green Arrow, and it's true. But that's the first thing he said that's real. So, I mean, like, that is, like, way over what...
Right.
You know, being called a fish fucker. Like, let's be real.
Yeah, and he insulted everyone. I remember
he insulted
at the elementary school,
Batman,
like, the Flash, the Batman.
Superman. He insulted everybody down there. Like, everybody got it except for Wonder Woman. But feminism. Andy, our friend at the Flash podcast, Andy, at Stephen Amell, and was like, I wonder if he's heard this and what he thinks.
Very innocently.
Yes. Which, you know, I was thinking this, I was wondering the same thing. So Andy took one for the team, and Amell responded. And he responded something to the effect of, you know, I wouldn't know I'm over here, because he's on Heels on Stars, the wrestling show. He's like, I wouldn't know I'm over here showing people what real wrestling looks like, or something like that. Something to that.
Yeah, trying to teach John Cena what real wrestling
looks like. Can I say that, I didn't mention this before because it's not a superhero series, but under some category in the TV section, Stephen Amell's co-star in Heels was nominated for Best Actor, and he was not.
But I just have to say, like, how can Stephen argue with someone that he can't even see? Like, how do you teach an invisible enemy how to do whatever? So I mean, like, I feel like you could have just continued not to see not to see anything, especially because, like, DCEU isn't even really connected to DCTV at this point. So I mean, y'all know
if he just took a joke, you know, like,
just
hang out with the fans. And
he sounded like he was trying there. He sounded like he was trying to be in on the joke, but he's very bad at it. He, every time he tries to sound unbothered, he sounds like the
very
most bothered person.
Yes.
It's just a joke, Steven. Okay. continuing on in DCE news, the Batcat EW promo, they're just, like, promoting the hell out of this movie right now. And, one of us got to see it for her birthday, but cannot tell us anything about it. So just make sure to go to the theaters on March the 4th to see The Batman. It looks like all of the promo and...
I'm so excited.
It's amazing, so...
Yeah, it does. I mean, the only thing I can say, because it's there in the trailers and promo and the interviews and everything, is that Zoe Kravitz and Robert Pattinson do have chemistry.
That is very clear. Yes, that is very clear. And I do love how they're marketing it like it's a love story. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, because of course it is, but like they make it seem like that's why you should go see it. And I totally agree. So.
And then lastly, swinging on over into back into DCTV news, Eric Wallace is set to direct an episode of The Flash. I think he's directing the one that they're shooting now. Or co-directing, whatever. And then we also got earlier today the Flash Season 8 promo poster, which is just Grant with his cowl off, or quote-unquote Barry, staring at our souls.
Yeah, letting everyone know who he is, because at this point there's no one left that doesn't know.
That's very true. You know, it's very meta.
Yeah.
No pun intended. Anywho, getting into our format for the week, we have Naomi, Legends of Tomorrow, and Batwoman We will talk about what sparked joy, what did not spark joy, give feedback from some of our listeners, and then we will crown a Lady with Gumption of the Week. Side A, Kiss and Tell, will be hosted by Tati. Please take it away.
It is I, Tati, taking it away. Starting with Naomi, Episode 5, Shadow Ridge. With Naomi still shaken by her terrifying encounter with a bounty hunter, Dee continues training her on controlling her thoughts and emotions, and therefore, her powers. Meanwhile, as Naomi and Nathan rekindle their romance, the class sets off on an exciting week-long camping trip excursion to the aforementioned Shadow Ridge. Nathan wants reassurance about his relationship with Naomi, and Anthony continues to be an interloper while apparently also being affected by the scary campfire story of Jimmy Moonshine. In other news, Jennifer and Greg are roped into Commander Steele's investigation of Naomi's alien rock and have to cover up more things to protect their daughter. Dee and Zumbato tentatively team up to get rid of the bounty hunter. That's after Naomi, and the episode was directed by Stephanie Turner and written by Jason Ganzel. Maybe. I don't know how you say your last name. What sparked joy?
Nathan and Naomi were super cute, like in their little 7 months ago date flashbacks to better times for them, I guess. You can clearly see that they have chemistry, they get along really well, and I like the fact that it's addressed in this episode why she broke up with Nathan, like why she was hesitant to pursue this relationship, because I don't think the first scene was like, I'm like, is this supposed to convince me that they're not supposed to be together? Because that's not what happened. So I'm really glad that she was confronted by it, because she was kind of avoiding him the whole episode, and how Annabelle played like she was the middleman basically in that whole scenario. So I really appreciated that, and we got a little bit more from her regarding like why she is not willing to get into it. But I'm glad that she decided that she wants to at least try again. So that was really cute. I really like the fact that we had Dee and Zumbato team up this episode, because I had no idea. Yes.
Can you, like, what did she decide? Because I feel like my stream like cut out and I did not hear the reason why she was scared.
She said that was afraid because, like, at first the relationship was all really fun and she was afraid of getting serious, basically, like, of the real stuff. And so she pulled back from that. Yes. And so she's like, but what she's afraid of more now is not giving it a chance. And so she decides to try.
Okay.
Yeah. And Dee and Zumbato's team up because I did not know that they knew each other, but that was really cool. It was a nice little reveal, and also kind of deepened the mystery surrounding Naomi's homeworld. And, you know, we also got hints of Dee's love maybe popping in again, because she's clearly, she seems like she's still alive. So I'm really excited to see where that goes. And at least I like the fact that her parents got something to do this episode outside of like their relationship to Naomi. Like, you can see how they're trying to protect her behind the scenes, even though they seem to be doing a terrible job at it. But, you know, the attempt was made and it was super cute. So it's nice that they have their daughters back.
I agree with like your three storyline approach to the light, because I feel like that really like lines up what was best in each of those plot lines. I love Nathan and Naomi. I think they have like wonderful chemistry. I think he's very sweet and just kind of like chill and kind of like laid back. And I did not know, like, I don't know what was going on with me when I was live tweeting, because I just apparently missed all kinds of stuff. I did not know it was a flashback, because it was like indistinguishable from the present. And so that makes me wonder even more, like, why was this not, why was there a break here in the first place? But I guess, you know, she told me why later on the episode and I just didn't hear. So that makes sense. And I am hoping that it will continue to grow stronger or steadier. Even if he's not supposed to be the end all to be all, I would at least like a good arc through their relationship and have it be steady for a while. So Anthony can suck it. I think I liked the smaller pairs too in the friend lying format, because the first couple of episodes we had all six people in the Scooby-Doo gang doing everything together. And this time we got nice little pairs. I really liked that we got to see Annabelle with Nathan team up this time. I thought that they complemented each other very well. And I like that Annabelle is kind of the she understands Naomi, so she's able to help Nathan and also help Nathan communicate Nathan's point of view to Naomi. So I feel like she's a really good mediator in that sense. I like the new mystery of whatever this rock is, this human kryptonite that was in the storage closet, and what that could mean, if it's related to Earth 29 and all that kind of stuff. I liked Dee and Zumbadu because it was just so unexpected. I was like, were y'all working together? Like, because it seemed like he was on one side and Dee was like protecting Naomi from her, and now they're like talking to each other like, I thought we had a deal. I'm like, what was the deal? You know, so and you know, that's kind of like the grown and sexy side of the plot, because you have like both of them being intimidating for like to the bounty hunter to try and get what they want, and so it adds a lot more mystery. Now I'm kind of thinking, on the one hand, you know, I was already kind of on the fence about whether Zumbadu was good or bad in relation to Naomi. And now I know that Dee has been working with Zumbadu. I'm like, so is this like a setup? Like, does she think that she was safe here? And, you know, so that it comes up with all kinds of these like possibilities of how this story could unfold. What if Naomi finds out about his relationship with Zumbadu and all this kind of stuff? So it's getting really like juicy. So that's pretty good.
I think they hinted that Zumbadu was royalty.
Yeah.
So that's...
And I feel like they also hinted that Dee used to be a bounty hunter, right?
Yes.
So was he originally sent here to hunt Zumbadu, to hunt like Naomi? And then he's like, oh, well, she's a baby and she's good. I'm just going to leave her alone. You know, like, what is the story there? So I feel like that's, we're opening up all these little doors of possibilities of what could happen down the line. And then with Naomi's parents, it was a good attempt. The attempt was made. And it was really interesting because now the government, you know, on the one hand, it was great for Naomi to have parents on the inside to be able to protect her from things like this and the government going down. But now that the government knows that they know something is going on, then that also comes up with a lot of different exciting kind of like possibilities of how that story could unfold. And also because they were debating on whether they should just run, like pick up and leave, while Naomi has just rekindled a relationship with Nathan. And so that's a hint that maybe somewhere down the line they're going to have to make a decision to either stay or go, fight or flight kind of thing, and uproot Naomi's whole world again. So there's all these kind of little different things that are happening and unfolding that could open up into new fun possibilities. I'll say.
I agree with basically everything y'all are saying. I mean, I especially liked, you know, that we got to see a little peek at Nathan and Naomi in the past and the present, even though it was also indistinguishable to me, but I did know that it was the past. And I was just like wondering why that had to be the past. But either way, I also like that it gives us insight into the criticism we had earlier, which was kind of that like Naomi didn't really seem like she particularly cared either way with any of the people, but now we can see her actively being interested in Nathan and having the backup from Annabelle being like, you know, she doesn't take this lightly, she's making a choice, and that means that she really is for reals choosing you. So we know, we understand that the reason why she was so kind of like blasé about it before is that she didn't want to take it further with anyone. Like, she enjoys the flirtation, and then she's afraid of that next step. So I like that that did add some real characterization to her and retroactively explained the lackluster angles.
And I guess that also makes sense because of her being a military brat and moving around a lot.
Moving from one place to the other to show putting down roots is scary because then they could be supplanted, which, like you just mentioned, would be interesting if then her parents present her with the possibility of having to leave when she's already, you know, invested in this particular relationship. So that is of interest to me. I also did like the splitting up and like the little mini dynamics. It was nice to see Annabelle having insight into Naomi, conveying that insight to Nathan, and also kind of just like being team Nathan in the sense of like she does want it to work out for them and she does think that he is a good guy for her. Because on the one hand, you have Anthony being like, oh, he's not the only fish in the sea. But then, like, why would we trust Anthony?
Oh, I'm so dizzy. Let me fall into the middle of your conversation.
So, like, but why would we trust Anthony's perspective on his rival when we have Annabelle's obviously much more unbiased, just I want what's best for Naomi perspective, which is nice. Also, I really enjoyed the little conversation with the science lady who was just so happy that someone came to ask her about about science. So yeah, that was fun. And just in general, like getting to see like little moments like of like the campfire, like telling little scary stories was cute. Like a cute little like seeing these kids being kids. I also did like the Zimbadu and D team up, and then the can of worms that it opens, just the many questions that we have. I liked we got a little bit more background on Thanagar, or like what it would mean for D to be switching sides, if he even is, right? And it definitely puts Zimbadu more and more into question. I think in previous episode when he was talking to Leader Lady, I don't remember her name.
Akira.
Yes, thank you. Akira, that's right. Which reminds me, yeah. Okay, anyway. So, I always think of anime when I hear her name. So, yeah. Anyway. So, like, he's in a very gray area right now where, like, he obviously appears very menacing to Naomi, but maybe it's, like, a misguided kind of, like, I'm trying to help here. Or maybe D is the one that will, reveal himself to be Two-Faced. But either way, it's obviously people who did not always have Naomi's best interest at heart, but probably now would more so, I guess, if that makes sense. By the way, I'm interested to see where it's going and how it will pan out. And I think it was nice to see the conversations between the parents without Naomi, just so that you see just how deeply invested they are in her and in keeping her safe, and what lengths they might go to in order to do that, whether or not they are necessarily good at going to those lengths. So, what did not spark joy?
excuse me. Everything else, I guess. This episode was just, it was not hitting for me, like, at all. I was generally bored most of the time, except for the scenes I mentioned earlier. I feel like, besides the whole Naomi, Nathan, and Annabelle, Nathan conversations, I wasn't really invested in them being at camp. It's starting to feel like there isn't enough high school conflict at all, because it just seems like these are great kids, all straight A students, and like they're just doing all these things for university. But I'm like, do I care? Because I don't. And maybe it's because I'm older and, you know, this not
it is degree. Not because you are older. Because teen dramas is still where I live. And this is not.
Like, you know. Right, like, there can be some more tension there, and I feel like they don't really do much of that, and it's starting to, like, show. And it's, like, Lourdes and Jacob weren't even in this episode. I didn't even notice.
I noticed Jacob wasn't there, because I'm like, why do we have to deal with Anthony when we could have a double date right now?
Yeah, I noticed that Lourdes wasn't there. I did not notice Jacob wasn't there. Wow.
I
guess Anthony and Jacob, you just switched out white boys. So.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Okay. I was like, well, why is Jacob suddenly into Naomi? No, just kidding. But I just didn't
register. I'm glad they had a smaller group so that it feels more like we can have solo conversations with a couple people, you know, and that was nice, but it just didn't feel like anything really happened. Like, by the time she fought the camp counselor guy, I don't even know what happened after that. It feels so half-assed in that regard, you know, like all the cool mysterious stuff is happening elsewhere, and yeah. I feel like Naomi is saddled with all this high school stuff that isn't as interesting, and it's sucks because I know they have to keep her in high school, but at the same time, that's not where our interest lies, and that's not where the excitement is happening either. So
we keep after coming up with mysteries for her to do.
Yeah, and it's starting to feel like, you know, a lower quality Nancy Drew in that regard with high school stuff. So, you know, I feel like they could, you know, do a little bit better job with that stuff because it did not keep my interest in this episode. Maybe it was the writing. I don't know, but still.
Yeah, I will say one thing that I forgot to mention in my likes is that I like that she had some reservations, like when Anthony was all gung-ho about, come on, Naomi, we have to solve this mystery because that's what we do every Tuesday. And she was like, you know what? This is kind of dangerous. Maybe we should not do this. So I like that she was kind of thinking more of the risks involved instead of just, you know, sending her friends blindly into all of these little adventures or whatever. I did not like that she had to be paired with Anthony.
Yeah, I forgot to say that. I did not like that either. He was kind of really grating this episode, for sure.
He was very annoying. And it's like, you know, at first when the teacher put her on the bus or in the Jeep with Anthony and Nathan was on the other thing, it's like, well, this teacher is about to be Nathan's villain origin story. And then Anthony was like overly excited about Moonshot Jimmy, and he was just being annoying from the get-go. And I was like, you know, I could feel Nathan's hand shake, like a little Arthur handshake, like, but then he started getting on my nerves when he, like, him just, like, happening to fall in the middle of their conversation when they're having, like, an actual conversation, or him being, like, just really pushy. Like, something happened to him. Okay, tell an adult, call the police. Like, why are you pushing Naomi into doing something that you don't want to do? And of course, like, Nathan's gonna support Naomi, but it's like, you know, the whole thing of like him and Annabelle being like, why do we have to do this? We don't have, this doesn't have to be like a urgent kind of thing. And he's like, no, this is what we do. And it's just like very pushy and very aggressive and trying to get Naomi to do something that she didn't want to do. And it was also kind of like, because it's what she would normally usually do, and he knows that, and he knows that's a way to get in between. It just felt like very calculated on his part. Yeah, and like he's like competing with the wall. Like you don't have a competition right now. Like you lost. Just like, you know, let there be some breathing room. And then the fact that in the trailer, apparently, which I also missed because my stream cut out. But he was saying that she wasn't, that Nathan wasn't right for her. And I thought that was annoying too, because it, like, you are also not the answer. So I didn't like, I don't know where that's going to go, but it just feels like he is being very, very extra for no reason. Like, it wasn't like they went down anything. She turned down a pizza date and that was it, you know? I feel like if it was like Lourdes saying that, you know, maybe you could see other options, you know, because I feel like I respect her more as a potential love rival. Anthony is just trying way too hard, and I hope that they stop doing that with him very quickly, because that's going to get high-key annoying. And I do agree with you that all the interesting plots are usually away from Naomi. And they have to give her, like, a little consolation plot because she's the main character. But all of the intrigue has been with the adult aliens. And so until that kind of intersects with her plot line, and I really feel like one of those kids has got to be an alien for them to be able, for her to be able to, like, do that and have a storyline with that.
That would make Anthony more interesting.
No, not Anthony. Lourdes. Lourdes, yes. Anthony, no.
Yes,
Anthony can Lourdes just sit the fuck down. Yes.
And Lourdes needs a purpose. So
yeah. If Lourdes is from Earth 29, then I feel like that would be on and popping. And that would create like a lot of a real love triangle instead of this mess. Yeah. I think overwhelmingly Anthony was just like my biggest no joy whatsoever part of the plot.
Yes. To take that element further, like, yes, Anthony was supremely annoying, but I also don't like and this may not be what they're doing, maybe the point is to make Anthony annoying, but I don't like the idea that that's them trying to plant a seed. Like, oh, see, maybe Nathan isn't, no! That Nathan isn't the right one, right? Listen right. to what Anthony's saying. And I'm like, no, bitch! Anthony's stupid! Because
I don't really listen to Anthony either. Yeah. Oh, you know what? You know what also gets me going about the fact that you said that you're not good enough for her is because he probably thinks that
mad about next week.
I am preemptively mad because like this, it's very Snowberry-ish. Like we both love science. We both love, you know, right, mystery, right. blah, 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 blah. We have so much in common. Her best friend, Annabelle, is literally, you know, pretty much a female version of Nathan. And the fact right. that she and Naomi don't have commonalities in the sense of like science or whatever. But that's her best friend. So you don't have to be the idea that you have to have the exact same interest as somebody else to be the right person for them is stupid.
Yeah, it's such an amateur way of thinking.
Yeah. And Anthony is immature.
Mm-hmm. But yeah. So for Anthony to think okay. that or even to think that he has like, you know, like the better say of like who Naomi should be with or like what is right for Naomi is incredibly annoying to me. And I just hope that the writers aren't trying to set it up so that he is right. Because that would be even worse. I would rather he just be an asshole. But speaking of, you know, Lourdes just not appearing in this movie, I feel like she does not have a purpose. Mm-hmm. Like, the only purpose that she and Anthony have is to like Naomi. And now Naomi has made a choice. Mm-hmm. And Lourdes didn't even go to the school, so she has no reason to be there.
She can't go camping. Unless she was, like, a camp counselor.
Yeah, right? But and so like and I feel like that makes me I'm like, why did y'all make this choice? Like, what's the point of the Lourdes character if you guys made the choice to have her so that she can't really be involved? It's very strange to me. And also just like her better than Anthony, so I just wish we could swap places. But okay, it's fine. So aside from that, I definitely agree with you guys about the lack of drama from the teenagers. It's not believable. Like Anthony, I guess, providing some drama, but everyone's just like pretty chill with it. Like Nathan and him being like is that's like the extent of the drama we have gotten so far. And not that I need to be subsumed in teenage drama all the time, but they are teenagers, so it's only natural that they would have some. It's unnatural that they don't have any. And furthermore, considering that the show started with her wanting basically being obsessed with Superman and like kind of like wanting to emulate Superman, I maintain that it's super weird that she's not using her powers to in any way emulate Superman. Like, shouldn't that be the first thing that you would do if you had powers? Or even to, like, more actively be investigating? Like you said, the mystery, the intrigue, all of that is around other people, is around the adults. So even though she is, like, you know, using meditation to hone her skills, and I can appreciate that it might take, like, it might be, like, a, you know, long stretch of time before she's really actually used her powers and knows how to use them. But why wouldn't you amp up the drama or amp up the interest by putting her in situations where having the power or using the power would be beneficial, that she should do it, and then there's, like, obstacles to overcome in her learning process? Like, but we don't get that. It's very weird. So yeah, I would like to see more of that. I'd like to see her more actively involved in A, using her powers, and then B, learning about the origin of said force.
And plus it would give her a chance to fail a couple times. So
yeah, exactly.
Like, okay, well, now I need to really focus, you know?
Tati, you just reminded me of something else that I absolutely sparked zero joy. And again, okay. It has to do with Anthony. When she's like, okay, I am going to go out and I'm going to investigate this. And then he just like pops up like, oh my God, what are you doing here? And they get in trouble with the counselor. Or no, even before then, when she had the locked, you know, thing that she had to open and she had to use her powers to do it. And he's right there. I'm like, oh my God, I swear to God, if he sees this. And then when she had to like use her powers to get rid of the counselor guy, I'm like, I swear to God, if Anthony gets in on her secret about being an alien and Nathan doesn't get to you, I'm just going to be so pissed.
But it's also just kind of like weird that they're like always there and yet they're not in on the secret. Like, how do they not know?
I don't know. But no, I was just mad. She asked him, like, she asked about it, like, afterwards. And he was like, oh my God, I was so dizzy. I don't know. But is he really like, oh my God, I'm so dizzy. I don't know. Or is he like faking it?
That sounds like a fake in it. That sounds like
a prediction to me.
Yeah.
I don't like this. I don't
like it either.
Yeah.
I would be so, so mad.
But yeah, and then just in general, like, just so far, the stakes seem very low. Like, there's, like, a far-off threat, but the threat is not imminent. And I want some more in-my-face threats. Hopefully it's building up to a finale showdown with whoever. But yeah, there you go. That's all. What do we have feedback?
Yes, Suarez says, Naomi was good, but not great this week.
Oh.
The camp trip was... Yeah, I know. It's a step down. The camp trip was interesting, as was the mystery surrounding it, but I guess it got resolved a bit abruptly. But I did like Naomi's talk with Nathan on being scared to get close for fear of loss. That was definitely relatable. I was so confused at first why Anthony was reacting so strongly to the rocks, so it was kind of funny that it was just because he's a regular human. I'm way more interested in whatever is going on between Deans and Badu, the latter of whom definitely isn't any sort of villain, and I'd love to hear more about the skeletons Dee has in his closet. He's one of the most interesting characters for sure. I'm overall still enjoying the show, but I really wish they'd pick up the pace on Naomi's story more and focus more outside the high school stuff. It feels like everyone's waiting awkwardly around for something big to happen that hasn't occurred yet, but I guess we'll see as we go into next week.
Beautiful. And that's the only one we got? Only Suarez right. Talking to us about Naomi?
Only Suarez right. Talking about Naomi.
So speaking about, you know, you did mention a prediction adjacent. Mm-hmm. So what else? Anyone want to add on?
No.
Well, if... I mean, love interest is around. Or, like, exists. Love interest of Dee. But there's something tragic about it, right? So they're on opposite sides. They have to fight. There you go.
That's wow. All. You really dug deep for that.
Thank you. I tried.
The attempt was made.
I do think one of the kids will have to be an alien.
It has to be.
Yeah. Yeah. Because otherwise there's no purpose. So I think you're right about that. I think that I definitely agree that one of them is an alien and hopefully it's Lourdes. I mean, yeah. Because otherwise, I guess the other option would be it's Anthony and that's why he's so pressury with Naomi. Because, like, maybe if they date, then he could, like, take her to
his... He's too boring to be an alien now.
But then he would be gone, right? Because he's the villain. So he would be defeated. And then Lourdes could...
He's the villain.
Yeah, he'd be on our villain side. He's not going to be a friendly alien.
We're going to get you out of here, Anthony.
Exactly. I'm going to get you out of here.
I wouldn't even buy him as an alien. It would just...
No, he's just so boring.
Well, I just don't buy him as a human either, so it doesn't really matter, does it? I am so sorry, actor who plays Anthony. I just don't like Anthony.
Maybe he's like the general commander. Maybe that's his son. He lives there.
There you go.
He's like a local or whatever.
Mm-hmm. That's true. That could be. Maybe he's just trying to get close to Naomi to understand her secret and give it to the dad.
Oh. We're going off the deep end. I think we
move on. Rude. All right. So moving on to side B, retirement party undo switch. Legends of Tomorrow, the penultimate episode of season 7, Too Legit to Quit. Which, if I had read that title before I watched the episode, I would have immediately known it was a fake out and there was nothing to worry about. But that's okay. With Gideon hurt, the Legends only have one way to save her. Once evil Gideon is activated, she continues to try to destroy the Legends until Gideon reminds her of a certain protocol that must be followed. Trying to help, Gideon negotiates a deal to save the Legends, but it requires the dreaded word retirement. The Legends are mostly happy with how their futures look, minus Zari Tarazi, who likes being a hero a little more than she likes creating audible lipstick. But they are loath to leave Gwyn without his beloved Alan, and so Gideon brings him back to life. It looks like all is well and good, but when Gary and Gideon are celebrating their newfound life together on the Wave Rider, she admits to him that Alan is a robot, like we all knew he would be. Just as Gary decides to forgive her and stick around to keep the human side of Gideon alive, evil Gideon boots him off the ship and sends him to the Netherworld, where hopefully he is alive and uses the key to go to the Hell Dimension. I don't really know how it works, but hopefully just not dead. And then lies to Gideon that Gary just left the ship of his own volition and abandoned her. Thankfully, Gwyn already figured out that Alan is not really saved, is not real, and thus is already developing a new plan that will obviously force Legends to come back together. Episode was directed by Sud Sutherland and written by Morgan Faust and Leah Puyo. Puyo. I'm sorry. Puyo! I don't know whatever your name is. What sparked joy?
I don't remember because it's been like 2 weeks since the last Legends episode that we saw. So I don't remember for the life of me what great news Gideon had right before she got stabbed. But I really like that it picked up on her being saved. And that protocol 247 that technically Gideon cannot self-destruct, which means a Gideon cannot kill Gideon. And therefore it saved not only Gideon's life, but also all of the Legends on the ship, as long as they're in the same space as Gideon. So I felt like that was like a, you know, it was a very tense opening and we were able to get the ship back on, but have an excuse for why evil Gideon could not kill the Legends like right out. So I thought that was handled pretty well. I feel like if this was prepping us for a series finale, then I think the episode did a great job of really giving all of the characters space to breathe and process all of their emotions about the idea of going into retirement. I love that it was Gideon's idea. I love that she was able to talk to AI Gideon and come up with this kind of compromise that could work for everybody. And it makes sense for her to be the captain of the ship because she is not only human, but she also understands how AI Gideon works. So I thought that it was a good negotiation tactic for her first time. And I like that the little graduation ceremony that they had for her, she's, you know, lived a season and a half now as a human and gained all of these like experiences. And then she also has her AI computer self and she's finally able to like graduate Legends Academy and become the new captain of the ship. I like that everyone was happy for her. I like that despite the Legends skepticism that AI Gideon would let them leave, it was good that they actually got to see what their futures could look like. I like that we got to see it. I think my favorite futures, I really like Behrad's like Sesame Street guest appearance and his song that kind of carried out throughout the other montage of Legends. Abe Lance has a daughter. Astra is going for president. You know, all of these kind of seemingly good things. But I like that it wasn't an easy decision for everybody. So you had Zari, who she becomes very successful, but not in the way, like it felt like a regression for her. So I like that she wasn't sold immediately. And then I also like that Astra felt sorry for Spooner having to, you know, go back to 1925. So she's with her mom, but she'd never be able to see her again. And it really kind of shows you how much each of the people have grown, like Zari going from being a little bit shallow and all about like her business and everything when we first were introduced to her to now wanting to leave more of a legacy behind. And then also with Astra and Spooner's relationship, how they both started out as kind of like newbies on the ship, freshmen on the Legends, and how they had this whole cross-country tour with Gideon. And how you could see like the culmination of their bond when AI Gideon is about to eject Spooner from the ship and Astra just threatens to like blow everybody up if we do not save my best friend. So I really like that little trio and also Astra and Spooner. And then I also like Behrad and Astra that we continue to get more of their relationship. I thought it was hilarious that she was like distraught over the fact of not seeing Spooner again, but she's like, well, Behrad, I guess we got to break up.
It was fun while it lasted for like 3 days.
I know. And then he was like, I like that he turned it around. I was like, oh, well, I guess you're not going to figure out where I was going to take you. And that kind of, you know, bringing them back together. And we got like a nice little kiss out of it. So I really thought we had some good content there. What else? I love Spooner's idea to clone the keys. I thought that was great. Way for them, again, there's another compromise that kind of solved all their problems of having to the hesitancy of having to leave each other. And now they don't have to because they can all see each other whenever they want. So again, it's a nice little compromise that it is the end, but it's not the end for their relationship. So it doesn't feel as sad. Yeah, and I do like that Ava's bond with Gwen, how we kind of seen how that progressed and how she was sad that he wouldn't get to see Alan again, and her and Zari scheming up to save Alan. And I do like that Gwen realized that the Alan Gideon brought back was not his Alan. So, because I was kind of like thrown off a little bit when he didn't know what the quote was. I'm like, huh. I guess that's just like a weird thing they're not going to address. And then he did address it. So I thought that was a good way to, like a cliffhanger to bring us into the finale.
Yes, I agree with all of this. This episode was really sad. I was very sad. It was like a nice prolonged goodbye. But I think I do agree that I like that the whole episode gave each character some space to think about like what their future looked like and whether they want to give what they have up to kind of pursue that life that they might not have thought about before, because, you know, maybe being on the ship has been like something so adventurous. Obviously they get to time travel, they get to do all these things. And so they were really living in the moment and not thinking about what is after Legends. And I really like how Nate was even like, you know, Legends retire, but we don't all retire together.
And they were like, yeah, but then what about Ray? What about Nora? What about blah, 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 blah.
So, like, a lot of people have gone on to live their mm-hmm. lives and stuff, but not all at once. And so it was really, that's what made it even more sad, because it's like no one was going to be left behind. Mm-hmm. But I do like, you know, especially like Ava Lance have a daughter that was really cute. And also, because I've been wondering for some time, like, in previous seasons, you know, Sarah was hesitant to be domestic and like settle down in that kind of way. And now she is very excited about doing all of that stuff. So it's a nice progression of her character as well to, you know, be all in on something that she was not previously and then you have like Gideon kind of graduating and becoming this leader, unexpected leader, like part of the ship, part of the crew type. She's like, I'm Gideon. This Gideon is trying to like kill all of you. I am going to think the way that she thinks because I am her. I also really love how diabolical like AI Gideon really is. You know, she's just like, I will figure out a way to throw you out of the ship somehow. And that kind of made for some very intense / funny moments. Especially, I mean, I guess when like Gary was thrown from the ship, it was like, oh my God, is Gary dead? But at the same time, I know he probably isn't, but it was just like intense to see how willing she is to maintain protocol mm-hmm. and how opposite she is from the Legends, who are like, let's throw protocol out the window and do whatever. So I just feel like the episode in general really honed in all of the characters, gave them a lot of focus, and gave them a lot of food for thought in what it is they want to be and do, especially like Zari, who has... like, her arc made me sad this episode because she's been someone who has been trying to find her place, and, you know, admitting that she's been living in the shadow of other Zari was a big deal. And I liked her, Nate's conversation and how Nate was like, you know, I do all of these things, but I'm going to be, my value is who I am as a person and what I make out of my relationship with Zari versus, like, how others see me and what I've done. And so I thought that was really sweet and an important conversation to have. And it'll be interesting to see whether they're just going to be like, fuck it, I make my own future type stuff. Excuse me. So, yeah, just a solid episode overall. And if we are nearing the end, I will be very upset. But I think that this really set the tone for how they could possibly end Legends, whether like next episode or in the future, you know.
I agree. I definitely thought it was really bittersweet to watch them all kind of like come to the agreement or the conclusion that they could retire and that maybe they would be happy mm-hmm. with these futures as laid out. Of course, I love that Ava Lance have adorable daughters. And I especially loved, well, first, I really also love that Zari was not happy with it because she was still, now she wants to, like you said, leave a legacy behind. She wants to do something that has greater impact on the world, as now she has gotten to experience that kind of a lifestyle with the legend. So I thought that was nice. And not everyone was like, oh, yeah, let's go. But I also like that Astra, even though Astra had been happy with her storyline, LOL, when she's pretending to be Spooner and she sees that Spooner's going back to her time and everyone is stuck in their own times. And then she was like really sad about the idea of not getting to see Spooner first, specifically because I love that friendship and that dynamic and that was really sweet. But then in general, that they still wanted to be able to interact like the family they were. So we got the keys as a compromise, and I'm sure as a plot device for the finale that will somehow be of use. But either way, I liked how they got to the creation of the keys. I also really liked Evil Gideon being like, so are you saying I can't get rid of the tiny one? Or I can't just constantly wanting to destroy
somebody?
Exactly. Destroy the legends, drop some bodies, and having to be pulled back constantly by not so evil Gideon. Gary was so adorable throughout the whole episode, and I really loved his little, moral quandary, emotional crisis at the end when he found out that Gideon had faked the return of Alan. And then he's like, no, but I love her, but I can't stand by and let this happen.
I can't be doing this.
Exactly. That was super adorable. And I was so sad that, evil Gideon got rid of him, but Gary, I know that you will be back. You are too strong to to lose to evil Gideon. But anyway, I also really liked just the whole concept of the lives they can have after the Wave Rider, because it is kind of like, it makes a lot of sense that at some point it does have to end, right? And that sometimes, like what happens when the timeline does not need fixing anymore, right? The fact that they have messed up the timeline as much as they have fixed it was brought back in again, bittersweet way to be like, okay, well, maybe it is time to stop mucking around in other people's timelines and start trying to live our own. So they really set it up in a way so it's like, this is actually would be a good thing if they did get to do this. Like, this would be a happy ending, except for Alan not getting to be, or Gwyn not getting to be with Alan, which I also thought was really nice that, like, they weren't comfortable going to mm-hmm. their happy endings until they could ensure
his happy ending.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. That was really nice to acknowledge everything that he has done for them and wanting to pay it forward or wanting to pay it back for him. So when Gideon brought Alan back, obviously, like, it had to be a fake out, right? Because it couldn't end this way. But I did like that they held on to it. Because, like you said, Jessica, I would have expected as soon as he did not know the line for Gwyn to be like, well, clearly it's not you. But I guess if you're thinking, like, maybe Gwyn did not want to hold them up either. You know? He wanted to let them go.
He wanted them to have their happy ending.
Exactly. So he waited until he was back in his own place and then was like, pull the plug. I'm going to save my man. So that was a really cool cliffhanger for the finale. And I cannot wait to see what happens next. What did not spark joy?
If they were prepping us for a series finale, I feel attacked because I was not really expecting it. I was, there's no kind of like hints that it was coming up. And, I felt like the retirement party plot went on way too long without someone yelling like psych. So I was like, oh my God, is this it? How many episodes do we have left? It's not like really a no joy is that there's anything wrong with the episode, more as it is kind of like, I feel emotionally disturbed and I don't really know what to do with it and how it's going to like end. I almost feel like it has to, like, how do you recapture what they were able to do in this episode with everyone retiring and like the party? It felt very much like the cast of Legends of Tomorrow are celebrating their show, the end of their show kind of thing. I don't know how you, I assume we will find out if it's renewed or not. And I assume that however they wrote the finale will end in a way that there is a crack of a possibility, but also a happy ending for everybody. But it's just like, wow, if this is not for real, then please tell me, because you are starting to worry me at the moment. You know, I think it's one thing if you're prepared for the show to end, so you can kind of like enjoy it with the characters. But if you weren't prepared for it, you're just kind of like, you don't feel ready. Like, you don't feel ready. But yeah, I don't know that there's any big, like, no joys. I did think it was, like, weird when Gideon saved Alan, because she heard Ava and Zari talking about it. And I'm like, did she just go back and find a way to save him without, you know, I was very confused how she was able to save Alan without messing up the timeline, unless she just had the same thought that Zari had, which is a brilliant thought of taking him, believing his dog tag. So technically he did die, you know? But yeah, they answered my questions or resolved that feeling of discontent when Gwen did realize that Alan was a robot. And it was a nice timing to bring back in the robots, because I thought we were done with them when they killed off all the Robo Legends. So that was a nice little circle back. But yeah,
I was actually mad at Gideon for kind of stealing Zari's hero moment. I was like, how dare you go and get Alan before they go outside and get, you know, put their plan in motion. So I was very frustrated at that. And then when we found out he's a robot, I was like, okay, there's still time. But I agree about the whole possibly setting up for a series finale, just because by this point in several, you know, years prior, we've had news that the shows were all renewed in like January. And this, I don't know if it's COVID or like they're holding off on it or whatever, but it's just, it's hard to face, because this episode did feel like it kind of came out of nowhere, not in the story, but in the sense that like it could end and they're like wrapping things up, because I don't see, and we've joked before that like, oh my God, Legends is probably going to end this year. And the one year I'm like, Legends is probably going to get renewed. They might cancel it, but I hope that's not the case. But at the same time, I'm thinking like, I don't know how you do end your show if you've already sort of semi-ended your show. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You've introduced retirements for the Legends. You've done all of the setup for them leaving the ship and, you know, giving it back to Gideon. So we kind of like circle back to the beginning with Rip and Gideon being the one man and the AI on the ship. And now she's the captain and there's the AI on the ship. So I don't know.
How do you continue being Legends when you've already given Gideon the promotion? Like, you've already given her the ship and you've already moved on. Like, how do you like, oh, by the way, we're just gonna stick around, you know? So it's kind of like,
I feel like they could go on like, you know, their next mission will obviously seems like it'll be like their last hurrah, but I don't know. Concerning.
I also do not know, and that was definitely the lack of joy, was thinking that this might really be the end. Not so much because I don't think it's a good note to leave off on, because I do think it would be a good note to leave off on for them to have one last hurrah and then go on to live the lives that they need to live. That's probably the best possible ending, but for it to come with such short notice would not be pleasing to me. I would like to know when the final season is the final season, and I think that Legends has gone on long enough that it would deserve to have a previously announced final season so that everyone can
party with them.
Exactly. So that was a little bit like disconcerting. Even though, again, if I had read the title, then I would have known and not have felt stupid at the end. But that's my bad. Aside from that, I'm like, I can't even really think of any like negatives. Maybe just like, if that is like, if Gideon really can see the future and that is their futures, and that is a little bit anticlimactic, like I would rather see that in the final, like mm-hmm. a final montage, right, to know that that's how things turned out, than to have them see, than to see that and then we get
the final montage. I feel like it has to have changed
exactly
when they go and save Alan. Yeah.
Right. So they'll save Alan. I'm sure that it'll change things and it'll be fine. But while I was watching it, I was like, is this how you're going to show me things for now? I was kind of like, okay, thanks. But yeah. But other than that, I thought it was just a really good episode. And it had me in my feels. Do we have feedback?
You know Swar had stuff to say. He says, holy shit, Legends. Now, I definitely don't think this is the intended series finale, but the writers definitely wrote it to act as such just in case they don't get renewed next season. I could imagine that the selling of the CW really threw a wrench in the plans. Wait, how far in advance would they have had to known about this to write it out this way?
Well, a few months, maybe?
Yeah. But they also might have known that that was in the works before it was announced publicly.
Yeah. But as a finale, it works so beautifully and in the service of all the characters. But I love how Zari refused this as being her happy future and knows, well, I guess technically Gideon didn't say he would be happy. She said it is your future. Zari refused this as being her happy future and knows that she wants to do so much more. She's come so far and she's just as compelling as Zari 1.0. I was so emotional at everyone's futures. Behrad as a famous singer-songwriter. Astra as a successful politician, Avalanche's parents, it was all so emotional. But there was an undercurrent of suspicion that all of this was too good to be true, and of course it was. As much as we love Gideon, it just can't be her and AI Gideon managing the timeline. And we see that the Legends, especially Gary, are core to who she is as a person and keep her morally grounded. Her creating a robot Alan was a backstep for her in a moral sense, and Gary rightly called her out on it. She should have trusted and told the Legends his death was a fixed point. There's so much to dig through with this episode, and whether this is the last season or we're blessed with one more, of course I'm hoping it gets renewed. Legends forever. I'm immensely satisfied and can't wait to watch the finale next week.
Agreed. Do we have any predictions for the finale?
We save Alan.
Yay!
Save Alan. Save the cheerleader. Save the...
Oh my god.
Whatever.
Yes. If they don't save Alan, I'm going to be so furious if after this whole season they don't save Alan. That would be the worst. The worst!
I feel like they have to save Alan. Like, there's just...
Yeah.
Oh, you know what also tipped me off? I thought it was weird that when Gideon brought back Alan and he just, like, randomly... kiss Gwen. He's like, oh, I thought that's what you wanted. That also seemed like not in line with who we know Gwen to be.
Right.
His personality being very like conservative, very Catholic. I would assume that Alan would be the same way. So for him to just like go in for the kiss without any kind of like hesitation, I think was another like little warning flag that went off. But that and not knowing the quote.
Yes.
Oh, isn't what's his name? Damien? Faison.
Oh, yeah. Donald Faison.
Is supposed to be in
the finale. Yeah. Which I think will also probably be setting up the next season if there's going to be
a next
season.
If they get one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And since he's like a time traveler too, maybe he will be instrumental in saving Alan.
Oh, he's also a time traveler. Oh, interesting. I feel like they will save Alan, go off to their retirement, and in the final whatevers, that's when we're introduced to Donald Faison and presents like a challenge to Gideon that she can't solve on her own. She's like, oh my god, I gotta call the Legends. Dun, dun, dun.
Oh, okay. It'd be interesting if they used...
Or maybe he's a new Legend.
...as like a spin-off show, because... I know Berlanti's been trying to make a Booster Gold movie for, like, ages.
Right.
So make it into a show instead.
Oh, that's true. It could happen. All right. And now our final entry, Batwoman. We're all mad here. Ryan, Sophie, and Jada come together to formulate a plan to stop Marcus. Mary seeks to make amends for the harm she did as Poison Ivy. Alice continues to spiral out of control and contends with her mental demons. When Mary unloads on Alice for enabling her and allowing her to kill someone, Alice is undeterred from her Joy Buzzer plan, but she does make a pit stop to take responsibility for the man Mary killed as Poison Mary. Jada is kidnapped by Marcus along with the Black Glove Society members, including Barbara Keene. Hey! Sadly, not the same Barbara Keene as in Gotham, which would have been an awesome compliment to... Victoria Cartagena playing Renee again, but that's okay, whatever. And is about to be met with Marcus's form of retribution when Ryan saves her, and then Jada saves Ryan in turn, and in the meantime, Alice gets taken back to Arkham. Meanwhile, Ryan and Sophie hit their first relationship snafu when Ryan is reluctant to tell the team that they're together. But once it's resolved between them, the team is naturally overjoyed, and Ryan and Sophie themselves are happier than ever. In less good news, Alice has given Marcus access to the Batcave in order to make the Joker jealous of him. Directed by Eric Dean Seton and written by Maya Houston and Daphne Miles. What sparked joy?
Ooh, Batwoman has been firing on all cylinders this season. I really like this episode in with just kind of like upping the stakes and all of the character stuff. I especially liked, because at first I honestly thought Alice had buzzed herself or whatever. I'm like, oh my God, is that it?
I know that was like my concern watching the trailer, like, why?
So it was a nice fake out. But I do like the way that they weaved, you know, all of her guilt and her past transgressions into the episode, because it's like she does seem like right now she wants to change back into Beth, but she doesn't really want to do the hard work that will take to do that. But at the same time, she's being eaten alive internally by her own guilt manifesting itself in the people that she has killed in the past. So that was really interesting and kind of like a nice deep dive into her psyche, versus like her kind of playing off other people externally, like we're seeing what's going on in Allison's mind right now that wants her, like why she wants to change, but also why she's sort of like holding herself back from changing, and because she doesn't think she deserves to change. So that was all interesting. And I like the kind of push-pull with, you know, whether to let Alice have the buzzer or whether Marcus should get a second chance. And it's like all of these, you know, thematic elements working beautifully together. I especially liked how they linked Marcus's past, like the day that he became the Joker, essentially, or he, you know, on the path to becoming him, was also the day that Beth started to become Alice. So that was really
birthday buddies.
Yeah.
Or unbirthday.
Yeah, right. So it's like, writers, I see what you're doing there. All the connections, so beautiful. So I really love that they did all that. And even like Mary, the whole episode is just about kind of like looking at your own guilt and why you feel this way. So like Mary going to visit the family of the man that she killed and not being able to really like confront them because Alice took the fall for her. And just kind of showing how much Alice cares about Mary, that she wouldn't want her to face that burden. But it was interesting that Mary didn't go through with it at all. But I like their I like their partnership in general this season, and it's like come a long way from the start, and kind of like they have each other's backs in a weird way now. So I really like that. And I just really love the Sophie Ryan stuff again, because it's like, you know, they slept together, they're in the next stage of the relationship, but at the same time, their mind's kind of still being held back by her feelings of not wanting to, or not thinking that she deserves anything good in her life. And so that sparked a nice conversation with Sophie about like how she's never had a girlfriend publicly, you know, she's never told anybody about anyone. And so like this is a big step in both of their like lives, and you know, coming so far from what they have been in the past and like how they had relationships with other people, but it wasn't like the same, and how they both really just deserve happiness was just really nice, and kind of like a lot of character growth in that one nice conversation. And even like Mary's reaction was just hilarious. She's like, what? Like,
no, what?
So good. And she's like, how did I miss this? I'm like, girl, you were poisoning Mary the whole
time. Right.
So all of that was just genuinely endearing, and I loved it so much. And it really just, like, them four together, and even Luke being, you know, not knowing what was going on. He's like, are you wearing the same outfit that you did yesterday? And not even putting, like, two and two together. It was really very Luke of him. And, you know, it was just a nice group scene kind of showcasing their friendship. So I really like this episode a lot, and even, like, all the Jada stuff of, you know, she's come a long way too in terms of like not wanting Ryan, and all of a sudden she's like, I'm not going to leave you behind anymore. Like, that's no longer going to be the case. So I will choose you. And that's a big deal, especially like for Ryan, because it's Jada's kind of been all talk before, and now she's putting her words into action. So that's really great.
I think especially because she chose Ryan over Marcus in that moment was really what kind of what walked the talk, talk the walk, whatever you say in that thing.
She walked the walk, yeah.
Walk the walk, talk the talk, all that kind of stuff. Yeah, I think that really kind of proved how much she was starry. And especially how it builds on their conversation the episode before when Ryan really kind of unburdened herself all of the things that she was feeling and how, you know, Jada's platitudes, I left the money, but the doctor stole it, weren't really cutting to what the issue was. And this I think, was Jada's response to that conversation, which is really good. I also like the Sophie and Ryan push and pull. On the one hand, you know, it's something new between them. So I could kind of understand Ryan not wanting people, like, in their business and trying to, like, you know, get into it. But I think I really understood Sophie, too, when she was able to, like, verbalize, you know, the fact that she's never been in an out relationship before. And, you know, if you want to hide our relationship, it's like, oh, there's something wrong with me, or, you know, all that kind of stuff. So I like that they were able to have that conversation and talk through it, and talking about meeting moms, which I think they were going to have to settle for Jordan. I like that Rand's like, well, right, now Jordan likes me, so I'm good. I thought that was really cute. Nicole as Mary, I think she said, like, all of those, like, that whole scene of her, like, laughing and deliriously and being like, you know, wait, what? All that was not scripted because they were also really tired. So all of that was just, like, off the cuff. And I thought it worked really well. Her being super excited versus, like, Luke being like, I don't understand what's going on here. So I agree with that. That all worked really well. And I really liked Alice's plot. And like you said, the parallel between her and between Marcus and how their villain origin stories began. I thought that was really cool how that all unfolded, because we heard his origin story at the beginning about the Joker getting on a bus, but it could have been any bus. We don't know. And so for that to come back around and be so intimately connected to Alice from season one, it kind of, like, sets, you know, them both up at the same time, like, on the same level of their villain journeys, as in something traumatic happened to them, altered their brain chemistry, and now here they are. I think I also liked Marcus kidnapping the members of the Black Glove Society and just kind of, like, talking about the, I don't know if it's, like, hypocrisy or whatever of rich parents trying to throw money at their kids' problems and thinking that that will solve things when there's really, like, a deeper underlying issue or something like that. They just kind of, like, let me throw money at it and see if it'll go away. So I thought that that was interesting. It gave his story a little bit more depth than just, like, oh my God, Joker jokered me and now I'm crazy, you know? It gave his sociopathicness a little bit more of a direction, I think. I liked the back and forth between him and Ryan about who had the worst life. And, you know, Ryan's like, I'm sorry I didn't have, like, a Disney Fast Pass growing up. My life being much better, you know, all this kind of stuff. I liked Alice. I like that Alice did not get away with taking the easy route with the Joy Brothers. So I agree with you. I thought it was, like, great that it was hallucination and not the real thing. I like that Mouse came back because I wasn't expecting that. So to see Mouse and then again to see Ocean, these, like, memories of her past and her mistakes saying, you know, being her conscience when she's trying to run away from it. And then also I think it's really interesting. This is a very bad comparison, but I'm gonna say it anyway because I'm gonna put it in to ways that the youth will understand. But I mean, it feels like it felt like this episode Alice was when she was trying to, like, do everything and say all these, like, hurtful things to get the Joy Buzzer to get what she needed, like when Rue on Euphoria when her mom took the suitcase and she didn't have her drugs anymore. She just like went off. That felt like Alice in this episode. So this is a very crude comparison, but I feel like it works. If you work with me, it'll work. And what she winds up going too far in the same way that Rue went too far with like this hateful stuff she said, where she actually, you know, meant it or not. Alice telling Marcus how to get into the Batcave was, you know, it was a bridge too far. She crossed the line. I like that she knew that when she was apologizing to Mary, but yeah, that was like her low point mm-hmm. Rue moment right there.
Rue moment. I love that comparison.
Well, there you go.
I love that comparison, and I agree. But pending the outcome of that enormous faux pas, I do love how they have made the Mary and Alice dynamic believable and like deep enough that they're going through this like really ugly back and forth with Alice acting out and Mary being like, "Well, you're not my sister because a real sister wouldn't have let me kill that man." and yet at the end they still come together with like Mary being like, "I know you're trying," and Alice being like, "Well, I have more news for you." So like I do like I really buy them as sisters now in a way that I never would have, certainly not in season one, and but still not even in season two, like while they still have like the like lingering of Kate around, you mm-hmm. know. That was really like both of them were connected to her, and now that's gone, and it really is like it almost feels like this has been building for much longer than it has been. Mm-hmm. So they've done a really good job with it. Kudos to the actresses and also to the writing, because the writing on Batwoman this season has been quite excellent. I did love both that Mary wanted to come clean, right, and wanted to give that family closure and accept her punishment, but then also that she wasn't stupid and then tried to undo what Alice had done, right? Alice already took credit. and Mary could have been like, "No, it was me. I did it. Take me."
But I don't know what she thought she would do after she went into their house and like, "I'm sorry, I killed your husband and your father."
Go to jail, I guess. That's why. Where, I'm like,
was she? Was, did she call like the police to meet her at the house? Like, I mean, like, what would
I guess?
She...
I guess she would have left it up to them, right? Like,
yeah.
Call the police, I guess. You know, or maybe in Gotham, people will just buy like, "Oh, well, you were under the influence of poison."
I don't think so.
You know. Well, which, you know, like, that's why, like, also I did really like the opening sequence, and I like that they went so far with the opening sequence for me to think, like, wait a second, is that really how we're resolving Alice? She just took it, and now that's that? And mm-hmm. there was, like, so many scenes of it. But, like, I also would believe that Gotham would be like, "Oh, okay, well, you were under you had the Joker buzzer, and now you've been un-Joker buzzered. Okay, cool. I guess you didn't do anything. Bye." So... but yeah, also great use of the return of Ocean and Mouse, and to have them kind of like haunting her throughout the different scenes, to the point that then she thought that when Mary came that it was like her orderlies. So yeah, that was all really well done, both in terms of the acting, Rachel Carson's always killing it, but also in terms of the way that the writing has been threaded throughout the episode. Also loved that the Jada and Ryan like coming together and like becoming mother and daughter for real is believable, because based on the beginning of the season, I would never have believed it. But you still have the dual side of Jada, right? Like when Marcus is calling her out for just like only caring about her image and like trying to cryogenically freeze her child, as well as Ryan's sister for that matter. And there's like, that's still a present and something that she did that needs to be like tackled. So she's a very complex lady, and I love that for her. I love that everyone found out about Ryan and Sophie by the end of this episode. They were super cute. I'm glad that Sophie got to be open about her concerns and be like, "Hey, you know what, this is the first time that I've been out and with someone, and I want to know that you're in it just like I am," which is fair. So I'm glad that they tackled that first obstacle and that it did not turn into something bigger. So yeah, overall, 10/10 would recommend. What did not spark joy?
Just like small things. Well, I mean, this is a big thing. Luke not having anything to do, just kind of hanging out and not appearing for most of the episode. It's just consistently frustrating that he's just there, but he doesn't actually have a real role. Like, even things that could be a part of his story, his, with his dad, his, you know, PTSD from being shot, all of these things, his family, I don't know what's going on with his family, like, those things could be very interesting, and they could weave that together so well with what's going on with, you know, Ryan's family and all the other stuff. So it's like, the choice not to give him anything is a strange one. It's, he's very much a supporting character in the sense that, like, I will sit in the Batcave, I will be on your comms, I will direct you and be your GPS, but that's about it.
It's kind of funny, because once we thought that Marcus took over and locked them out of Wayne Tower, that he can't stay in there, so he had to do something.
Right, and he still didn't do anything. So it's just very confusing to me, and kind of a waste of his character, because I feel like there is so much potential there that they don't tap into, and it's just annoying. And then just like a minor thing, but I feel like Mary is still doing the whole blaming other people thing for her actions. Like, I'm glad she didn't openly admit to the family that she killed the guy, but also just blaming Alice for, like, if you didn't stop me. I was like, well, Alice actually did tell you not to leave the car. So
she tried to get you to go to Greece, girl.
So I feel like, you know, maybe hopefully she'll be taking the steps towards taking responsibility, but I feel like she's still doing the whole, you know, I'm blaming you and you and you for what I did, but you did them too, you know? So just something minor. She's doing a lot better.
I felt like very, like, come on, girl. Like, when, you know, Alice was being needy and then, like, you have a sister who needs a joy brother. And Mary was like, well, you're not my sister because you let me kill that guy. And you, like, I was thinking, but you put her to sleep. So how is she supposed to stop you from killing somebody? So I agree with you that I feel like she was lashing out and blaming Alice for something that, you know, for once was not Alice's fault. And I don't know if that's what prompted her to go to the house to confess. But then also, you know, when Alice did it for her, she's kind of like, okay, you know, so she's still kind of, cause I said, like, the last episode, like, when it happened, that I was been hoping that she wouldn't get a body count, because then that's like taking her away from who she is as Mary. But then I was like, you know what? The way this happened, I think if she ended her poison Mary thing without any consequences, then that would be a bad thing. So now she does have consequences, so that's a good thing. But then Alice took those consequences away. So now she's back to, like, not having any consequences.
Her guilt has to be enough.
So yeah, I definitely agree with Luke, because it was definitely very noticeable that he's only in 1-2 scenes max, and the scene as Batwing, I think we had it in the noms, like, that could really literally have been like a stunt person, because he didn't have any lines. And even if he did have lines, then cameras could just do them in like ADR. So what is, like, I don't understand, like, what is cameras doing that he can't be filming? I'm sure he's there. So it's like, why don't the writers write something? And I feel like it's because they have people paired off. You have Mary with Alice, and you have Sophie with Ryan, and then you have Luke. And period.
On his own little island.
And he doesn't really get to do anything unless Camrys is writing it in a comic. So, like, in the crossover comic series that they're doing right now, Luke has a day off, and he has, like, I would love for there just to be, like, a random plot line of Luke having nothing to do and trying to figure out what it is to be a normal person in the daylight, walking around. I'd love for Stephanie to come back, because they clearly don't care about Hamilfox at the moment. So, and she's tied to Alice now. So I need him to have a duo somebody that he can bounce off of and that can pull him into like a separate storyline on his own. Because I feel like they think they're not really going to touch the dad murder mystery anymore. Because it was like semi-resolved, but not really. But I don't think they're going to go into it anymore. I feel like they feel like they've solved the PTSD thing. So he doesn't have that anymore. He can be Batwing whenever Ryan is Batwoman and have like little duo things. But that's not really a storyline. So he needs someone on the show. Hopefully next season they will renew and we'll get a new season. He needs someone for him, like specifically for him. Yeah.
Well, that is definitely my biggest complaint as well. And it just seems never ending. They don't have, Luke is the Lourdes of Batwoman. Just no explanation or reason why he is not getting to do as much as anyone else on the show. So that's definitely my biggest complaint. And it doesn't even need to be Mary, pairing him up with Mary. But, there's also no reason why having an Alice and Mary through line would prevent Hamill Fox from moving forward. If anything, if you want to show them as oppositions, right? If it is something preventing them from moving forward, then make a storyline out of that. But instead, they're just like, no, we do not care. We're just not going to focus on cameras at all. Aside from that, I think it would be cool to know a little bit more. First off, know a little bit more about, I still want to know, how is poor Wayne, Enterprises, or whatever it's called, Wayne Company, handling, having the Joker, essentially, as their CEO. Do they want Ryan back? Do they wish they could change things around?
Right?
That one dude who was, interested, in what Ryan could bring to the table, maybe he could be hey, here's the, some secret way back in. I don't know. So that, especially now that he has the Batcave, and also I feel like they could do more with how the Bat team is handling not having the Batcave. Mm-hmm. Obviously it's bad if Joker has all the toys, but have they lost access to certain things that they really need, in a big moment?
Are they
or
still working out of Montoya's basement?
I think they're working out of the bar now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, did Luke just, make all that shit, on the fly? How does, presumably there's a lot in the Batcave that they could at any given moment need and probably could not have replicated as quickly. But maybe they could. I don't know. And also, they don't have access. I guess Luke still works for Wayne Enterprises, so he might still have access. But I don't know. I feel like they could do more with that, basically. Just like they could do more with the Black Glove Society. Dropping in Barbara Keen all of a sudden, that is, and name dropping that she is Jim Gordon's ex-wife, and then talking about her son, and I'm mm-hmm. Is the son Jim Gordon's son? What's happening? That could have been a whole episode on its own, basically. But otherwise, I definitely understand what you're saying about Alice taking away the consequences of what Mary did, but since the only logical consequence of what Mary did would be for her to go to jail, and she can't do that, I'm okay with it for the sake of the sisterly bond. what's our feedback?
So Sonia, there you are. She says, "Hey ladies, so glad to have Batwoman back and for yet another fantastic episode. Really glad that they didn't make Mary betray the Bat team by stealing the Joker buzzer for Alice. Thank God, just baby steps. I literally laughed out loud when Ryan was like, well, when you put it like that, about Alice's villain origin story. Laughing at Sophie thinking Jada was Ryan. Oh my God. Cream and sugar, dear. LOL. Awkward. Oh, that was funny. And it also is like a parallel to when she woke up alone after her one night stand with, what's her face? Montoya. Renee. Yeah. At least you got coffee, girl. That's funny. Sonya says, my heart broke when Mary said, but you're not my sister, poor Alice. Also, I don't disagree with Mary, and I'm glad she called out Alice for grooming her to be a terrible villain as, yeah, that's true. That is, point was made. Wait, when did the evidence of Marcus killing his dad get destroyed? Did I miss something? That was when, what's his face? Victor Zsasz.
Victor Zsasz, yeah.
Marcus contracted him to get the evidence from Jada. So that's when it was destroyed. So that's what you miss, girl. She said, at least when I lived with Alice, she knocked. Your mom almost saw me naked, laughed my ass off. Barbara Keane reference was great. Loving these Easter eggs and also wanting to know what Jada knows about her, because Jada was acting all kinds of suspicious in the apartment. Also, Jada being kidnapped by someone who knew the exact make and model of her car. My goodness, this woman needs better security. Well, it was her son. I mean, I'm sure he knows. She's probably predictable in her choice of pickup car. Luke pointing out Sophie wearing the same thing as the day before. Like, is he going to put two and two together and figure out that Waldemar is together now? No, he is not. Alice hallucinating Mouse and Ocean with throwbacks. Marcus killing the members of the Black Glove Society in the same way they tried to fix her children. Side note, but love his new look, and the jacket looks like it has blood dripping down it. Alice calling that family and telling them she murdered the guy. Oh my God, poor Mary. But why did that woman's son say he saw a blonde woman attack the dad? Maybe Red looks blonde to him. I don't know. The bus that drove the Kings off the bridge was the bus that Marco was on. Oh my God. Harley and the Joker reference, yay, for more Easter eggs. Alice told Marcus how to access the Batcave. I hope they can do a remote shutdown of the systems. Oh, that's an interesting point. Because, seriously. Also, I'm just snacking on crumbs, but I love the little Hamley. Oh my gosh, you love the, like, you can find the tiniest crumbs, girl.
I don't care about Hamel Fox on your
And I support don't. That.
What Hamel Fox? She said, I love the Hamel Fox moment when Mary was fangirling over Waldemar with Luke looking at her being all adorably confused. Anyways, that can't wait.
That is certainly a crumb.
If you want to make a crumb out of that, you can make a meal. can't wait for next episode, which I believe is the finale. Excited! And then, let's see. Swara says, holy family trauma, Batwoman! Another standout episode. Is logic behind the Joy Buzzer's ability to turn off empathy on and off silly? Yes, indeed. But I like that we ended with Mary. Nicole was amazing this episode, by the way. Thanking Alice for what she did for her. And I think we got the hint that Alice will realize that she has to actually put in the work to become a better person and not use the buzzer to turn back into Beth. But oof, what that whammy when she had told Marcus how to get into the Batcave. Ryan getting to put Marcus in his place for having everything and squandering it while she rose from essentially nothing was so powerful, and Javicia put on a powerhouse performance. Waldemar is officially a thing. I guess we didn't actually say that was a like, but that was like, we talked about like Mary's reaction, but not the fact that we liked that they were a thing.
Yes, I mean, it's obvious we did.
It's an obvious like
yeah.
Yes, I also obviously liked it, yes.
Yeah. Mary was figuring it out, was so cute, while Luke wasn't picking up on any cues. Looking keenly forward to the finale and hopefully the official confirmation of season 4.
Love it, love it. And speaking of, do we have predictions?
We've said that Alice just putting the buzzer to her head and poofing away all of her bad deeds is copping out.
Right.
Is that the same with Marcus? Can we make the same case?
I think no, because wasn't the buzzer used to make him this way in the first place?
But yeah. Okay, if we go back to their origin stories being similar. They were in similar situations where Joker hit the car that Beth was in to turn her down this path into becoming Alice. And he also is the one that hit Marcus with the joy buzzer and sent him off. So he is the reason for both of them being the way that they are.
But my argument would be that circumstance over time is what created Alice. So, like, even though, like, it wasn't her fault that she was in that situation, it's not like every single person in that situation would have turned into Alice. So then it's like she still made those choices, I guess, so then she can do the work to undo them. Whereas I'm assuming, I don't actually know how the Joker buzzer works, right? But presumably, if literally, if you get zapped with it, then you become like this, period, the end, then there would be no way for him to work his way out of it, I guess, is okay. What my argument would be.
I don't think either of them will be zapped by the buzzer. So they will both have to face the consequences of that.
Well, I think they would have to face you. Right.
Huh? Yeah. Because, like, how would he face his consequences if he doesn't know that he's making any? Or if he doesn't, like, if his brain has been chemically altered for him not to care that he's making any.
Right, he just has to either die or go to a better jail than Arkham.
So I guess, like, if he does, if they do joy buzzer him, because I feel like Jada wouldn't want her son to go to prison no matter what he did, if he's, like, truly her son again, will he face any consequences
for... That would have to be growth for her, that she would just have to take that, you know, take that L.
I mean, I have to imagine, too, that they'd want to keep Marcus as Joker. Like, he would be Ryan's Joker. He'll pop up randomly later on. So I don't know that he'll ever, like, if he doesn't realize...
Maybe they buzz him, but the buzzer, they think the buzzer works, but it didn't.
Yeah, also an option. Or at least, or it could, like, work halfway, where he's, like, caught between... You know, old Marcus and Joker Marcus.
He could be like Two-Face.
Yeah. So there's like a lot of opportunities for them to, you know, take the story. But I do think Alice particularly has to do the work, just because she spent a longer amount of time doing harm to people in our eyes anyway.
And she knows what she does. There
longer. Well. Exactly. She does. She knows that. So it's like she has to, you know, do the work to atone for her sins or whatever. But like, you're right. I guess, like, Marcus isn't in the headspace to realize he's even doing anything wrong, because he's like, "Oh well, this is just makes sense to me."
So my question was more so: will Marcus, like, what are they gonna? How are they gonna spend this with Marcus if these two people ended up in the same place because of the same circumstance? We're saying one can't do this, but this is a viable option for the other one. So just trying to see, like, where we think.
I think the other thing, too, is what, was it Mary that said it? And I think she's right. Marcus is actively wreaking havoc now, and, like, people will die. Whereas Alice is already trying to rehabilitate, even if she doesn't have the buzzer. Like, that's she's still true. Not, she's still not, like, actively hurting people. So that's why they need the buzzer for Marcus.
He's like, I'll kill everybody.
Like, that's what she needs to do. She needs to be like, I will kill more people than Marcus unless you give me the buzzer. Because she is genuinely on her way to trying to rehabilitate, she's not going to do that, right? Mm-hmm. Like, the reason she wants the buzzer to begin with is because she wants to be better. So
I was just gonna say, she was at the end there, she's already sorry that she gave away the Batcave. So she's aware that, like, and even if she turned back to being Beth, like, say she used the buzzer, she would still remember all the things that she did as Alice. Like, her becoming Beth isn't going to erase her, what's in her mind. Whereas, like, for Marcus, I actually don't know if he would remember. Like, I don't know how the buzzer works. So, like, if he is zapped again, like, will he actively remember what he's done the last several years?
And will that be a cop-out if he doesn't?
Mm.
See? You see where I'm getting at?
Yes,
you
know? Yeah. That's true. So, you know, I don't know.
Difficult.
I know. We don't rest our case, Your Honor. I don't know.
Okay. We'll just have to figure out what happens next week.
Exactly. We'll have to wait to find out. All right. So, with that in mind, we now need to declare a Lady with Gumption of the Week. Do we have nominees?
Oh, this week's kind of tough.
I guess Naomi, I would say the mom.
Yeah.
just to change it up.
Yeah. And for legends, I'm gonna go with Gideon.
Okay, Gideon. Okay.
Not evil Gideon.
Not evil Gideon. Although
human Gideon had some morally questionable things, but there was also some gumption in, like, giving this man a robot and expecting him to be happy.
And then for Batwoman,
I was Jada.
Yeah, I want to say Jada. I was going to say, like, she went in there to protect her child, and she, you know, stood up to Marcus, and she, you know, kind of helped save.
She proved her, what metal. She said was the truth.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true. She walked the walk as you
walked the talk and talked the walk. overall, I still want to say Jada.
Yeah, I think she's the strongest one.
I would definitely agree with that.
All right.
The other, yeah.
So we had two moms and a computer.
Two moms and a computer. Yeah. Love that. Diversity. Thank you guys. Thank you all for coming. Return next week is the flashback finally. Did I make that
it
up?
It is.
Oh my God.
No, it's the week after
the finales and the week, yeah.
Just kidding. Okay. Well, anyway, finales next week. So definitely come back for that. And in the meantime, you can send us your feedback on either if you want to send us delayed feedback on the previous episodes or remember to send the feedback on the upcoming episodes. Or if you want to make requests for Patreon episodes.
Which we'll do the same week the Flash comes back. We'll also be doing Batman.
That's right. That's going to be our next one. Yeah. That's going to be our next one.
Next Patreon.
Same bat time, same bat place. check us out at DCTVGumption on Twitter, ladieswgumption@gmail.com for feedback, or ladieswgumption.tumblr.com for shorter asks. Thank you all, and good night.
Bye.